Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf lamed tes. We're behind. We're on lamed ches. Let's be even more honest with one another. We're about in the bottom of lamed zayin and aleph, but we'll try to make a little bit of ground. I want to cover today stated goal. Usually, I don't get it, but I'd like to cover today and finish the I. Okay, topic of the I. Some interesting stuff coming up later on this morning. I'm going to read the Gemara, I'm going to translate the Gemara, but that's about as good as I'm going to do in terms of various eye ailments. Okay. We have cardiologists here, we have pain specialists over here. We need an eye doctor today. You'll see. I know. Okay, but before we get there, though, we have to finish up from yesterday. Yesterday's daf, we're going to go off on a little bit of a tangent. We're going to learn a Mishnah in Oelos, we're going to learn a Mishnah in Kalim. We got a little bit to do before we finish up. The question starts off, just to give you the background for getting through the sugya, question starts off with the piercing of an ear. We talked about how the piercing of an ear is going to render the Kohen pasul, right? We had that fascinating issue yesterday. You have an Eved Ivri who's a Kohen, and Haftias Adoni, and he wants to stay with his master, and so he'd like his ear pierced, but the problem is going to be that he can no longer function as a Kohen. Now that he has his ear pierced, so the Gemara brought that up yesterday, and the Gemara then went on to discuss exactly how big an ear piercing are we talking about. So the Mishnah gave us a shear, which is malo karshina. So you take this kind of bean, lentil, whatever it is, and it's got to be big enough so that it can go through the whole of the ear piercing. So my karshina, so I'm Rashavya Hinda. Okay, so that was, it's a Hinda, Rashi says a Vetch, I don't know what that is. Okay, all well and good. So now the Gemara has a question, and the question is really going to take us an entire Amud of Gemara to answer, just about. Okay, so we'll start over here, we're on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, we're about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Balmina Ravoshia Meravhuna Rabba. Okay, so the question was asked, and the question goes like this, Karshina Nechnasus V'yotza, when we say that Karshina has to go through the piercing of the ear, does it mean that it has to able to go in and out smoothly without any resistance whatsoever, meaning a larger hole? Oh, karshina ha'omedes. Or can it simply be that, in other words, it fits into the hole, it'll get stuck a little bit in the hole, but it'll fill up the hole, but it doesn't have to actually go through the hole? And so an extraordinarily technical question, but it's still a question nevertheless. And even though it's a super technical question, the Gemara will spend a lot of time trying to resolve this question. Amar lo zulo shamati. I don't know. However, kayotze bo shamati. But I'll give you a similar discussion, which is not going to be really resolving our issue, but at least you'll see that it's a similar discussion. Did not. So first we're going to learn a Mishnah in Oelos. We did this Mishnah yesterday. So let's quickly review. Hashedra v'agugol shechasru kama chisam b'shedra v'lo miyehem etame ba'ohel. So as I mentioned yesterday, in order for the bone structure of a human remain to give off tumas ohel, so you need the skull and the vertebrae. It's not enough to just simply have a random bone of the human body that does not give off tumas ohel, but rather you need skull and vertebrae. And you need an intact skull and the entire vertebrae column in order to give off tumas ohel. Now the Mishnah in Oelos tells us that there's machlokes between Beisham and Beis Hillel. How much is missing, how much of the vertebrae is missing, and or how much of the skull is missing in order for this remains to be considered depleted, diminished, and not going to give off tumas ohel. So as far as the vertebrae is concerned, Beis Shammah says two vertebrae, and Beis Hillel says one vertebrae, and as I mentioned yesterday, Beis Hillel comes out as a kula. It's a leniency. Because according to Beis Hillel, all the vertebrae need be missing is one, and then it's no longer going to give off tumas ohel. So Beis Hillel represents a kula, which is what we're comfortable with, because that's usually where Beis Shammah and Beis Hillel stand on the machlokas. All the exceptions to that rule is listed in the Mishnah in Adios. Okay, file that information away. That's going to be important for later on. Okay, now what about in the skull? Right, this is the part that we got to focus in on. Now, as far as the skull is concerned, so Beis Shammah says a drill hole, a malom mikdach. So again, they must have had a standard drill back in the good old days. Otherwise, what does that mean? And Beis Hillel says the amount that if you were to take away while the person's alive, he would have died. Now that doesn't give us a good shear, that needs further clarification. The Yosef Rav Chista v'kami by like edition anta manachay v'kama. How much is that? Amalei Rav Techlifa bar Avdumi Hachyam Shmuel Kisela. So the Gemara says in the name of Shmuel, it is the size of a sella, the standard coin that was used back then.
What's the size of the amount of skin that would regenerate on a
Very good. Amar Masnisa Amarlei. Now, various opinions in terms of whether or not this was an Amoraic statement or this was a Braisa. Okay? Just in other words, the Gemara is very careful about quoting its source in terms of where we got this information. This information, which is commenting on a Mishnah Oelos, was an Amoraic statement or was it a Tanaitic statement? So, various opinions. V'siman chatini Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. And just to help you remember which is which, so Tini Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. Shmuel bar Yehuda taught us a Braisa. So Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda says that this explanation, that the amount that you take from the skull and the person die is the amount of a sela. The Mishnah doesn't say that. But according to Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, it's a Braisa that says it. Okay. Amalei im kein. Now here we go. Okay, so all this is kind of like set up information because now we're going to get to why we're here. Why are we in this Mishnah in Oelos and we're trying to understand the Mishnah in Oelos. What is that all about? So Amalei im kein asisa divrei beis shammai v'divrei beis hillel echad ditnan. Here's the problem. Now that I know how much of a skull needs to be missing, according to Beit Shammai, a drill hole. According to Beit Hillel, the size of a sella. It's the same. Now, how do I know it's the same? Mishnah and Kalim, which Stuart reminds me at the end of today. I'm going to return to borrowed item. Mishnah and Kalim. Mishnah and Kalim, 17th Perek, I looked it up, so is going to basically teach us that the size of a sella and the size of the mikdach, the drill, is essentially the same. Ditnan. Well, we have the following Mishnah. Ma'or shalonasu bide adam shiro malay egrof. If you have a window that connects two rooms and so creates communication between two rooms, so it's malo egrof gadol, the size of a big fist. Vizehu egrofo shel ben avatiach. The fist of ben avatiach. Large man. Very large man. Very large fist. If you have a window opening up between two rooms and the window is that size and it was a naturally made window, I don't know how that happened, but it's a naturally made window. So that is going to create now communication between the two rooms. If there's tumas mace in one room, the tuma will go into the next room. Good. I'm Rav Yosef Yeshna Karosh Gadol Shel Adam. It's about the size of a head of a man. So this Ben Avatiach individual is so large that his fist is about the size of a head of a normal person. Nase bidei Adam. Now, if it's a man-made window, Shiro Kamale Mekdach Gadol Shel Lishka. It is the size of a drill hole, a large drill hole, Shehu Kepundayon Shel Ha'italki Ukesela Nironis. The Mishnah in Kalim tells us, how large is the size of a drill hole? The size of a sella. Okay, that's the Mishnah in Kalim. So what you see from the Mishnah in Kalim is that drill hole and sella are the same measurement, as indicated by this Mishnah in Kalim. Here's the problem, it's very simple. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel now are basically saying the same thing. So then we wouldn't be reading it as a machlokas. Okay, that's the problem. I know we seem to be a long way from home right now in terms of Bechoros, okay, and Six Perek. I understand that, but just stay with me. The Yeshno Kamala Nekev Sho'ol. I'm sorry, and and by the way, if you want to know how big this hole is, it's Malei Nekev Sho'ol. It's the same hole used for the yoke. The yoke that was attached to the animal that they harnessed then to whatever it was pulling behind him. So that yoke had a hole in it to attach, I guess, the chain or the string or whatever it is. So that's also the same size hole as well. So again, this must have been some sort of standard uniform hole that they had back in the time of the Mishnah, which everyone understood. Okay, Ad Kan Divrei HaMishnah, that is the Mishnah in Kalim. And the question on the table is, there doesn't seem to be a debate between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel in terms of how much the skull is missing in order for the skull to no longer give off Tumas Ohel. Okay? Simple. Simple question, good question, ishtik. He was quiet, he didn't know how to answer the question, as the question seemed to be excellent. V'amalei Rav Chista, Shema Mikdach v'chisu mo shaninu. And this is the reason why we're here right now, is because perhaps when we say the drill hole, we mean the drill hole going all the way through. It's not just simply the circumference of the drill hole, but it has to be where it goes in and out with a lot of ease. Now, you suggested that as an answer, but don't suggest that as an answer. That's the answer. And he says, and you can hang your hat on that answer, right? I added the English expression over here, but you can suspend yourself on this answer, hang your hat on it, like Chizkiah Avi Ikesh. Chizkiah Avi Ikesh, when he said something, nobody argued, no one disagreed. He was totally and universally accepted. This answer that we just provided is totally and universally accepted. Okay? That's where we stand right now. And at this point in time, the answer seems to be very good, because now it comes out that Beis Shammai's hole is going to be a little bit larger than the hole of Beis Hillel. Whereas Beis Hillel just requires you to have a hole of a cella, Beis Shammai, his drill is the same circumference, but the hole has to be big enough where it's able to go in and out. So that's going to be a larger hole. And remember, that represents a larger hole, represents a chumrah, because that now means that the hole is going to be bigger, has to be bigger, before the skull no longer is tummy. Okay. Now, to give me a moment. Now, the Gemara said, and this answer is so good, it's like Chizkiah Avi Ikesh. All right, as long as we brought up his name. So the Gemara says, where do we see him, and where do we see a statement made by him? Ditnan. So the Gemara quotes a Mishnah, Zayidu Zayidu Chizkiah Avi Ikesh. Lefnei Rabin Gamliel B'yavne, Shamar Mishum Rabin Gamliel Hazaken. Kol She'en Lo Toch B'kli Cheres, Ein Lo Achorayim. Okay, so please stay with me. This is going to be about a half an amud of Tumah and Tahara. Tumas Kalim, and specifically Tumas Kli Cheres. Okay. Just bear with me. It's going to, we're really off on a tangent, but it's part of the daf. We're obviously going to do it. If something does not have a toch, does not have an inside, right? One of your basic definitions of a kli, right, like this cup in front of me, is it has a toch, it has an inside. It's a container, and it holds things. So kol she'en lo toch b'kli cheres, ein lo achorayim l'achlika. Now, if it doesn't have a toch, like in the case of a kli cheres, a flat kli cheres, earthenware, that does not have a toch, so it's not going to be subdivided, meaning nitma tocho, nitma gabo, nitma gabo, nitma tocho. If one side becomes tummy, so does the other. If the other side becomes tummy, so does the first side. Now, it's interesting because it says gabo and tocho, the back and the inside. If this particular kli cheres doesn't have a toch, it's hard to identify what's the toch and what's the gav. But the point is very simple. The point is just that if it doesn't have a holding compartment, it's just a flat kli cheres, so it will become tummy on both sides. So the Gemara says, I don't understand what's going on right now. Meaning, this statement made in front of Rabbi Gamliel doesn't seem to make any sense. Kli cheres betocho tal rachmana. Is letoch it melei, leis letoch lo it melei. What are you even talking about? When we talk about a kli cheres, part of the very definition of a kli cheres is that it has to have a toch. If it doesn't have a toch, it's not makabel tumah. So what conversation are we even having? I'm Rav Yitzchak bar Avin hachi kamar. So the Gemara says it's a cryptic Mishnah, and it's actually not talking about kli cheres, it's talking about kli shetef. It's talking about wooden vessels that don't have a toch. Now, what we're going to do in just a moment is basically reiterate the same question. Wooden vessels also need to have a toch in order for it to be makabel tuma. So stay tuned, because that question is coming up in just a second. But lama li lemit le b'kli cheres. So the Gemara says, but before we even ask that question, why are we speaking so cryptically? Why, if we're talking about kli shetef, why not talk about kli shetef, and why not actually mention kli shetef? Why are we talking about kli cheres? And then you have to deduce, oh, of course we're not talking about kli cheres, we're talking about kli shetef. What a strange way to present information. So, neima kol she'ein lo toch b'kli shetef ein lo acharayim l'chalika. So the Gemara says, "Hakamash lan diyesh lo toch chareu k'kli cheres." So the cryptic language over here is trying to teach us this: if it does have a toch, if a wooden utensil has an inside, if it contains things, if it holds things, so halachically we're going to treat it like a kli cheres. So ma kli cheres nit matoch nit magabel nit matoch nit magabel af kli shetev nit matoch nit magabel nit matoch nit magabel. And so now I happen to have a styrofoam cup in front of me, styrofoam, new age material, okay, and totally synthetic. But if this were wood, or if this was kli cheres, if I make it tummy on the outside, it will not be. It will only be tummy on the outside. If I have the tumah come into contact with the inside, the whole thing will be tummy. Now, what I'm saying to you should confuse everybody. It really should, right? Right. Even if you've been with the daf for a while, because in the world of utensils, where do we ever subdivide a utensil and say part of it's tummy and part of it's not tummy? That's a strange feature. We know in the world of kli cheres, the only way the kli cheres becomes tummy is from the inside. But once the kli cheres is tummy, the whole utensil is tummy. And right now we're making a subdivision in a utensil. Well, if I only touch the outside, so only the outside becomes tummy. It's just strange, but the Gemara now is going to explain. So the Gemara says, where is this all coming from? Meaning, in a kli cheres, I understand there's a conceptually a difference between inside and outside. But if you're talking about a wood utensil, there is no conceptual difference between inside and outside. Like, what are you talking about? So the Gemara says like this. Look, you misunderstood the whole context of the discussion. If we're talking about tumah daraisa, in other words, real tumah, right? A sheretz, a person who's tameh, coming into contact with a kli. So, of course, it's not going to make a difference. The sheretz comes into contact with any portion of the kli, outside or inside, the entire kli becomes tameh, and that's really the end of the discussion. So we're talking, we're talking about tumas mashkin, where a liquid is tameh and that liquid comes into contact with a kli. Now let's stop. Let's pause right here and let's just state the facts. Facts are liquids or foods are not metameh kalim. Period. Minat Torah. Does not work. Food can only transfer tumah to other foods. And even that is a very limited context, meaning that the first food has to either be a rishon or the first food's a sheni, and then that which it touches is truma, meaning even then, it's limited. But food is not metame kalim. That doesn't happen. Okay, good. So that's all on a Torah level. Along comes the Chachamim, and they instituted what's called Tumas Mashkin, that if a liquid is tame and the liquid touches a utensil, the utensil will be tame, and this was a rabbinic legislation. Why did they do that? The Gemara here is going to explain. Ditnan. If you have a utensil that comes into contact with liquid, tame liquid, so touching the outside becomes tame. Only the outside becomes tame. Tocho, agno, azno, viyado, tahorim. If it touches the inside, I'm sorry. No, that was still part of the first statement. The inside, the rim, the ozen, the handle, the yadav, another handle, all that becomes tahor, remains tahor, I should say. Nitmatocho, but if the inside comes into contact with mashkin, kulo tame. All of it becomes tame. Demida araisa, here's the Gemara now stating the facts. Einocho metame kli. Vein mashkin metame kli. Minatora, food and liquid are not metame kli. Virabanan hu de gazor, mishum mashke zava zava. It's the rabbis who made rabbinic legislation. Why? The Gemara explains. Because we have a concept of mashke zava zava. If I have a man who's a zava or a woman who's a zava, he or she is an ava tumah, is a source of tumah. Anything they come into contact with are going to become tameh. But moreover, fluids of the body, not all fluids of the body, remember we made a distinction about different types of fluids. But right now let's talk about spit. Spit that comes out of the mouth of a zava or a zava is an ava tumah to the same degree as the person themselves. Basically, the spit is just an extension of the person. If that liquid comes into contact with a kli, that becomes tamei min haTorah. So the Chachamim said, you know what? Since we have conceptually a liquid that's metamei a kli, so you know what? we're going to make a blanket gzera that anytime any liquid comes into contact with a kli, that kli is going to become tame. But we want people to know that this is rabbinic legislation and not real tumah min haTorah. So what the rabbis instituted is basically a siman, a sign to let the world know this is only tumah derabanan and not tumah deraisa. Why is that so important? Why is it important to know if something's tumah derabanan versus tumah deraisa? So the best answer to that question, I'm not sure about the best, but a good answer to that question, which the Gemara is about to provide, is that if truma to come into contact with what is only tumah derabanan, so that truma really min haTorah is tahor. Are you allowed to destroy truma? Absolutely not. What if the truma is only tamei min derabanan? You still can't destroy the truma. So we need to know, this truma comes into contact with something that's tamei. Is it truma min haTorah or is it truma min derabanan? If it's truma min deraisa, so then the truma you can burn. You can benefit while burning it, but you can burn it. If it's only truma derabanan, so then you can't burn the truma. You got to let the truma, you just got to let it go. So, right, just leave it, if you will. So what the rabbis did is in this gzeiros tumas mashkin, they gave a way for people to know this is only tumah derabanan and not tumah deraisa. What's the way? Through this halacha. By telling people that if it comes into contact with the outside, only the outside is tameh. And then you hear that and you say to yourself, well, that's strange. Oh, I get it. Because it's only tumah derabanan. Yes, it's true if the mash can come into contact with the inside, the whole kli becomes tameh, but we gave a siman. The rabbis gave a siman. So, hilkach. Shavye day, skip a little bit. Ve'en mashke matame kli v'rabbanan hu degaz mishum mashke zavazava. Hilkach. Shavye rabbanan ketuma de kli cheres v'lo shavye rabbanan ketuma de araisa. De nafshe abdu rabbanan hekera ki hecha de lo lisraf aleha truma v'kachim. And why did the rabbis do that? As I explained, as the Gemara now explains, so that you don't burn truma and kachim when it comes into contact with a kli, that's only tame midrabbanan. Ihachi ein lo toch name. La'avid hekera. So the Gemara says, good. All this now is about a wooden utensil that is tamei, that has a toch. Well, we're going to make a distinction between inside versus outside. What if it doesn't have a toch? So now we're not going to make a distinction. So the Gemara says, if you're not going to make a distinction, where's your heker? Where's your sign that tells the world that it's a tumah derabanan and not a tumah deraisa? So the Gemara answers very simply. One heker is enough. Once you have it by a wooden utensil that has an inside, and once you've given an anomaly of a halacha that only the outside comes into contact with tumah, only the outside becomes tameh, that's enough of a heker. Okay, that was a long run-on sentence, and that was a lot of information. I do understand that. V'ein lecha toch b'klishet of daraisa bar kibula tumahu. So the Gemara says now, this whole discussion seems to be flawed. Because what we're basically saying is that by a wooden utensil, if it doesn't have an inside, so then it doesn't matter which side you touch. You touch one side, the other side's going to be tame. The Gemara is essentially now going to ask, what? What are you talking about? A wooden utensil, by its very definition, just like we said by the Kli Cheres, by its very definition, needs to have a toch. And if a wooden utensil doesn't have a toch, it's not mekabel tumah. So what's this? The whole discussion seems to be predicated on something which is not correct. So the Gemara says that dumya desak beinan. When it comes to wooden utensil, it has to be like a sack. It has to be like a sack. Same. Mas sak metaltel male v'reken av kol mitaltel male v'reken. So Gemara says, I just simply don't understand. Sack has to be carried with contents inside. Wooden utensils also need to be carried. So the Gemara says, b'hanach dechazel midraso. So the Gemara says, well, we could be talking about a wooden chair. Wooden chair doesn't have a toch, but it's subject to becoming tame. Why? Because a medras, right, a zava or a zava, or a nida or a yoledes can sit on it, and it will be tame. That's the kind of wooden utensil we're talking about. Ihachi cheres nami. So the Gemara says, if that's true, The same thing is not true by cheres, and the Gemara's answer is very simple. Ein medrash b'kli cheres. No, the same thing is not true when it comes to kli cheres. You don't have a concept of tumas medrash by kli cheres. Okay. Wow, that was a long tangent. And we did all that just because we said the answer is so good you can hang your hat on it, like Chizkiya Avi Ikesh. And then the Gemara quoted the statement of Chizkiya Avi Ikesh in his explanation of the statement of wooden utensils not having a toch, where they become tummy on one side, they will also become tummy on the other side. Okay. I get a chance to breathe now. Almost. Let's finish up now to the Mishnah. We're going to go back to that Mishnah in Kalim. Remember, we had this whole tangent started because we had a Mishnah Olos that was trying to describe the hole in the skull, where the skull is no longer going to give off Tumas Mace, and we had a machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says drill hole, and Beit Hillel says sela. Now, Beit Hillel didn't actually say sela, but we have an understanding that what Beit Hillel meant is sela. And then we quoted a Mishnah in Kalim, and the Mishnah in Kalim says they're basically the same size. That's a problem. And so what was our first answer? Our first answer is that the difference between them is the sella hole of Beit Hillel has to just simply be the circumference of a sella, where the drill hole of Beit Shammai has to be larger so that the drill can actually go in and out. Okay, that was our first answer. The Gemara is now going to suggest maybe there's another way to answer up this question. Rav Papa Amar Mikader Gadol Shaninu. So the Gemara says, well, if you go back to your Mishnah and Kalim and you read again the Mishnah and Kalim carefully, it's not your regular drill, it's your big drill bit. Okay? Different size drill bits, which I thought to begin with is, you know, there's not just one drill bit. So Mechlal de Mikader Stam Zutra, Nami Michesela. So the Gemara says, well, if you're right about that, so you're telling me now that a small drill bit or a regular size drill bit is smaller than a sella. So the Gemara says, "Hanichla Rab Meir El Rabban Michael Amemar did not." We learned in the Mishnah, "Be Eze Mekadeh Chamer Bekatan Shal Rofim Divrei Rabbi Meir." There is a further debate in terms of which drill size are we talking about. So the one opinion is the one used by the doctors. Right, the one used by the doctor, small drill, hopefully. you have any good ideas? What are they drilling? what are the doctors drilling back then? Yeah, okay. maybe for the teeth. Maybe it's a drill for the teeth. Really? Really? Wow. Okay. Did not be easy. Mekadeh chamer bekatan shel rof and diver and meir. Vechachamim mamim begadol shel lishka. The one that was in the lishka. Apparently, there was a big drill bit that was found in the lishka. So the Reb Meir minicha. So the Gemara says, okay, but even if we're going to go with Reb Meir's approach that we're talking about a small drill bit, so it's not. That's not good. Why is that not good? Because havelam mikula beishamim mechomer beiselavana denan tenan and delo tenan lo tenan. So then it comes out that Beit Shammai's hole is going to be smaller than Beit Hillel's hole, and that's a problem, because what then comes out is that how much of the skull needs to be missing? So for Beit Shammai, it's a tiny little hole, whereas according to Beit Hillel, it's got to be a bigger hole. It's got to be a sella hole. Comes out now that Beit Shammai is being the mako, and we have a Mishnah Adios, and the Mishnah Adios says here are the only times where Beit Shammai is Mekel and Beit Hillel is Machmir, and if I'm correct, it's a list of six, and that's it. And if we're right about an interpretation of hole sizes and drill bit sizes over here, Beit Shammai would then represent a Kula, and we can't, that can't be. So Am Rav Nachman Sela Nironi Shaninu Kemekadech Gadol Sela Stam Zutra Mimekadech Stam. So the Gemara says, well, different types of sellas. You look back in that Mishnah and Kalim, the Mishnah and Kalim made an equivalency between the drill bit and the sella. But if you read that Mishnah and Kalim again, just look at the bottom line of the previous Amud, Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. So that Mishnah and Kalim says, Uchesella Nero Neat. Nero Sella. Right? So, does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Nero Stella. So that's large. So the Nero Stella is Kemikdach Gadol. That is like the large drill bit. But Stella Stam. But if you're just talking about the regular Stella, the standard Stella, Zutra Mimikdach Stam. It's smaller than a regular drill bit. So, good. Meaning, so what we're going to do is we're just simply going to adjust the size of the Stella. And it's not a forced pshat. It really, in other words, you read the Mishnah and Kalim. The Mishnah and Kalim says that we're talking about the Nero Stella, which is a larger Stella. And that's the size of a large drill bit. But if I'm comparing standard Stella to standard drill bit, standard Stella is a smaller hole than the standard drill bit. Hard to imagine, by the way. I mean, we're talking about a coin over here. So I'm not 100% sure. These coins must be really tiny. Whatever the case is, assuming that that's correct, so then we're fine. Because now Beis Hillel is holding by the hole made the same circumference as the Stella, which now the Gemara is telling us is smaller than the drill that Beit Shammai was referring to in the Mishnah and Olos. Okay. And Stuart, with that, I'm going to return your Mishnah and Caleb. Okay. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam Shekol Midbaro. All right, everyone ready for a lot of good eye talk? Okay, the first Mishnah, I don't know if I'm ready. The first Mishnah talked about ears and what would be considered blemishes of the ear, so now that the animal can be, in the case of a regular carbon, be redeemed. In the case of a bechor, just simply be eaten, because it no longer can be offered on the mizbech as a carbon. We talked about four different blemishes by the ear. Now we're up to the eye, harisha ayin. Okay, I'm going to give it away. We're talking about the eyelid. The eyelid of the eye. Shenikev, shenifgam, shenizdak. Either it gets a hole in it, it gets a nick in it, or it gets a crack in it. The difference between a nick and a nick, actually some of it is removed. So in other words, your fingernail gets stuck, running your fingernail across the eyelid of an animal. Okay, this is real expertise. And a sedek is only a split, but none of it is actually removed. Hare be'eno dak tavlul chilazon nachash. Now, in the eye itself, the Mishnah over here describes various ailments that would render the animal balmum. So dak, right, if you take a look at Rashi, kloma hare sheyesh be'eno dak, it's a thin film, right? Perhaps we're describing a cataract. Perhaps tavlul. So the Gemara is going to explain what that is. Rashi says, stay tuned for the Gemara's discussion. Chilazon, okay? Rashi writes, it's the type of ailment shekorin limon. Phil, any help over there? Okay. And nachash also will be explained. I know these are creatures, chilazon and nachash, but apparently the particular ailment of the eye looked like the shape of these particular creatures, so they named these particular ailments after the chilazon and after the nachash. Perhaps once we know them a little bit better, it'll help us identify the chilazon, perhaps. And the last thing in the Mishnah, the atzev I think we're going to leave out from the Mishnah. Okay, chilazon and nachash. Ezu tavlul, lavana posek besira, v'nichnas b'shachor. Ashachor nichnas b'lavan eino mom. Okay? In the eye, there's a white and there's a black. The white of the eye, it's interesting. The Gemara has an expression to describe the white of the eye. The Gemara calls it the fat of the eye. Right? The white is it's a fatty substance. Okay.
They're talking about the pupil is black.
Right.
All right. But when you have a cataract, it can be white or black. Because they talk in here, if you get a cataract from trauma or a metabolic problem, it's a quarter of a cataract from the outside, so it's white. It talks here about lightning striking.
Right.
Lightning would cause a white cataract. But if you get a senescent cataract just from old age, it's dark and it can actually be black.
It tends to be black. So you'll see. In other words, basically the Mishnah is going to say like this. The eye, the very definition of the eye is essentially the pupil. Meaning, if halachically speaking, I'm not speaking medically, but halachically speaking, the black of the eye, the pupil of the eye, that's the eye. The white part of the eye, Again, the Gemara's terminology, it's going to be chalef. It's the fat of the eye. But it's not the eye itself. So if you have the white running into the black, that's a mum. Because now the eye, meaning the pupil, is now going to be affected. If you have the black spilling into the white, that's not a big deal. Because that white is not the eye. You need the blemish to take place, occur in the eye, and halachically speaking, the eye is only the pupil. So we start with the Gemara. We're now on the top of Lam Ches Amud Beis. So my haris amar papa tur bara de'ena. So what is the ris? So as I explained back in the Mishnah, it is the Rashi calls it the shura chitzona shel ayin. Okay, the eyelid. Dak tavlul tan rabban and tak mishuka haris emum saf enamum. Gemara is going to be extraordinarily specific over here, and again, much like Dr. Paris, if you understand these particular types of eye elements, you'll be with this Gemara. I don't follow a lot of this, but I'll read, I'll translate. So if the dak is depressed, if this, whatever this growth is a depressed growth, so hareiz emum, that's considered a mum. However, it's soft, but if it's floating, if it's a protruded growth, so that's not a mum. The Gemara says, but we have a braisa that states exactly opposite. Lokasha habishchor habalavan. So the Gemara attempts to answer it by saying, well, it depends on which part of the eye it affects, the black part or the white part. The Gemara says, stop right there. Wait a second. Rule number one, which we just learned in the Mishnah, is that there's no such thing as a blemish on the white part of the eye. The white part of the eye is not the eye. It's just simply not considered the eye. So whatever is existing, whatever is living or growing on the white part of the eye is totally disregarded and ignored. So Ella habedak lavan habedok shcha shachor. So the Gemara says, okay, we're talking about the actual growth itself that's growing on the pupil. Okay, so a growth growing on the pupil depends on whether it's white or black. If it's a black spot, which is depressed, saf ain't a mum, but a black spot that's not depressed but protruding is not a blemish. Dak lavan, as opposed to a white spot, which is depressed, meshuka in a mum, and saf hariz a mum. But if it is protruding, that is going to be a mum, v'simancha barka. And the Gemara gives us a mnemonic to help us remember, barka, Dr. Paris, much like you were describing, some sort of lightning bolt, right, that goes across the pupil of the eye. Chilazon, nachash, v'atsev. Now, question of what the correct gears of the Mishnah is, we have the word atsev, in our Gemara it's going to change it to enav. Almost like a grape cluster in the eye. So the Gemara goes on to describe, Yibailu chilazon hu nachash, odema chilazon hu nachash. Now, chilazon nachash, is that a description of the same type of ailment? Or are they two distinct blemishes being described in the Mishnah? Tashmanda, amarabba, babachana, sachli, Rav Yochanan, ben Elazar. I was told the following by Rav Yochanan, ben Elazar, Zekein achad, haya b'shchunasov, Rav Shimon, ben Yossi, lekun yishmao. Now, there was a certain person residing there, his name was Rabbi Shimon ben Yossi, and he was extraordinarily reverent. He was awe-inspiring. He was so awesome that I never walked in front of him. I was that scared of him. I was that in awe of him. I just never walked in front of him. Avoided him. So one time I happened to have walked in front of him. So Amar Li, Shev Bini, Shev. So he says to me, come here, sit down. Can only imagine, right? This is, all right, if you know anyone like this, he's just a very frightening individual. And, not scary frightening, but just, he's awe-inspiring. And he says, sit down. So, of course, I sat down. Chilazon zemum kavua lishchot alav. So he says like this to me. You know the chilazon that the Mishnah describes in Bechoros in the sixth parak, the one we just learned about. So that is Zehu Nachash Amru Chachamim. That's one in the same as what the rabbis described as being Nachash. So we already see from this discussion that Nachash Chilazon, same type of eye ailment. Now here's the problem. I have an animal. I cannot look and rule on my own animal. Right? If you want to use the terminology of no gabadavar, you have a vested interest. So you can't. You can't look at your own blemish. Haval, but here's what you're allowed to do. Mora halacha la tamidim v'tamidim marin lo. You could tell over the halacha to your student, and then show the animal to your student, and then say to your student, okay, what do you say about this? Sounds a little bit like subterfuge over here. Now, wait just 1 second, because we'll clarify that point of subterfuge in just a moment. So, v'hamar abba abba amar avuna kol tamini chachamim shemar alacha uva im kodam maisa amra shamim lavi im lavin shamim lo. Now, the Gemara says, here's a basic rule. If there's a novel halachic ruling that comes up after the incident is now in play, and then along comes the Talmud Chacham and comes up with a novel ruling that no one's ever heard before, at that point in time, you have to look at him, you have to say to him, sounds interesting, but we can't use that right now for fear, for concern that, you know, that novel ruling just came up for this special event. So what you need to happen is that you need first the ruling to have been stated openly and publicly before there was a need for that ruling. And then only after that point in time, once the, now that we're here, so then you can apply that ruling. So iunami moru uva hava mi'ikar. So the Gemara explains like this. This awesome individual who taught his student the halacha is not teaching it now for the first time. He's been saying this halacha for years. The chilazon, the nachash, it's all the same eye ailment. And he's been explaining this for years. It just happens to be that in this particular regard, this particular student didn't know it, but he's been saying it for years, so therefore it's not a problem of chishad. Ezu tavlu lavana posekes hasira. What is the tavlu that was being described in our Mishnah? The white going into the pupil. Now, Rameir says that if the white encroaches into the black, or if the black encroaches into the white, that is considered a blemish. And Rav Yossi Omer, and Rav Yossi says, no, an encroachment into the white, that's a blemish. Let me say that better. An encroachment of the white into the black is a blemish. An encroachment from the black into the white is not a blemish. So now we know our Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi. Interesting, because our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, and it's not going like Rav Meir. Okay? V'nichnas b'lavan in a mum. Shein mum in b'lavan. Amarav, ma'itam de Rav Yossi, dechsiv, yatsa mechelev einemo. So, and the Gemara is going to explain now. I mentioned this back in the Mishnah, but, you know, I looked ahead, if you will. Yatsa mechelev einemo. The pasuk in Tehillim describes the fat of the eye. Tarba de ene ikre. Einemo stama lo ikre. That white is tarba de ayin. It's the fat of the eye. It's not the actual eye itself. The eye itself is a pupil. Rav Meir maitama malash and tavlul davar hamavaval sayinayim. And Rav Meir disagrees because he says the words tavlul, tivulal, comes from the word belila. Anytime you have a mixture. So when the black mixes with the white, and it doesn't matter what encroached into what, whether the white encroached into the black or the black encroached into the white, Rameir says that's a belula, that's a belila, and that's going to be a disqualification. Halacha here follows like Rav Yossi, that only the black is considered the eye, and so therefore only when the white runs into the black is it considered a blemish. Charvar var. Let's do a little bit more for today. More eye talk. See if we can finish the eye discussion today. Chavarvar. Chavarvar is, I have in my notes, a white speck. Okay?
It's a corneal opacity. It's a scar. You get it from an infection.
Okay. Vahamayim. And if there is water in the eye, runny eyes. Hakvuin. And it just, in other words, a little bit of drainage of the eye is not a big deal. It's got to be a continuous run of the eye. Ezu chavar kavul kol shashash manim yom. Now the chavarvar condition has to be there for 80 consecutive days. Rabbi Chanina ben Tignas Amar both can also gimel pam mevesoch shmanim yom. Now there is a way to remedy the situation, and if you give the animal proper treatment and it doesn't respond to proper treatment, so then this is considered a mum kavua. A number of you asked me the other day, and I didn't know the answer. Meaning, what if it is a blemish, but with therapy, it can recover? Is that considered a blemish, or is that not considered a blemish? So, I'm not 100% sure what the answer is, because right now, the Mishnah is teaching us that what you're supposed to do with this chavarvar condition is give it proper treatment, which we'll learn about over the next course, the next couple of minutes. And if it doesn't respond to proper treatment, then and only then it's an mum kavua. It sounds like if it's treatable, it's not a mum kavua. That's what it sounds like from our Mishnah.
Well, from the Torah, it says that you're blind or lame, which is permanent, can be cured.
Okay, all right, fine. The Elohim Maima Kvuin. Now the Achal Laf Lach Vyavish Shal Gishamim. Now here is the remedy. Give it now, I'm sorry, if you give it Lach Vyavish, moist and dry fodder of Gishamim that was grown in rain. Lach v'yavish al shlachim in rain fields, or moist and dry in irrigated fields. O achal hayavish v'acharka chalach, or first dry then moist. Eino mum ad shiochal halach v'acharkach hayavish. There has to be a specific order in how you feed this animal as treatment for this malady, and that order is first the moist fodder, followed then by the dry fodder. Okay, more details about this. Masif Saman Rav Yehudi Detanya Chavavar Kavu Arbam Yom Umay Makvum Shmonim Yom Divrei Meir. Now Rav Meir says 40 and 80. 40 days for the Chavavar, 80 days for the draining of the eye, the runny eye. Rav Yehuda Omer Chavavar Shmonim Yom, and Rav Yehuda says no, the Chavavar is going to be 80 days. Ve'ilo in Mayim Makvuin. Now for the runny eye, what's the remedy? First the moist fodder, then the dry fodder. So, and it has to be done for 3 months. This therapy of moist followed by dry has to be done for 3 months. Hatavai tanino achalach v'yavish al gesham imlach v'yavish al beis hashlachim chesurim echzer v'hachi ketanu. The Gemara says, we're going to insert a little bit into this brisa, which is achalach v'yavish al gishamim harezem mum beis hashlachim eino mum. The fodder that you feed the animal has to come from rain field, not a irrigated field. Ude gishamim nami achal yavish v'achakach achalach eino mum ashiochal yavish achar halach. And even when you get the fodder from a rain field, from a field that gets its water supply from rain, then and even then it has to be specifically lach followed then by yavish. V'yeshno gimel chadashim, the Gemara says, and you have to do this treatment for 3 months. Ini, the Gemara says, is that true? V'atanya,
huh?
V'atanya v'haravidi barav and amar ravitzka bar ishan adar v'nisan lach. Here's what you do in the month of Adar Nisan: you give the wet, the moist fodder, and elov v'tishrei yavish. And in the late summer of Elul and Tishrei, that's when you give the dry fodder. Ema Adar v'chatzi Nisan lach Elul v'chatzi Tishrei yavesh. So the Gemara says it really is 3 months because it's Adar and half of Nisan. You're not going to feed it on Pesach. I made that up. That's, okay, but the Adar and half of Nisan, so that's 45 days. I know it's still going to be more than 80. Okay, and Elul and half of Tishrei right up to Sukkot. Okay, Abe, I know, I understand. Right, maybe these months over here are just examples. I'm not sure if these, but Ibai Elohu Lach Bezman Lach V'Yavish Bezman Yavish Odem Lach V'Yavish Bezman Alach. Now, are these months specific? Meaning, is it because in the middle of the summer, you're going to have wet fodder, and at the end of the summer, now you're going to be having dry fodder? So Tashma, I'm Rav Yehuda Barav, and I'm Rav Yitzchak Bar Yishan, Adar V'Nisan Lach Elul V'Tishrei Yavish. Seems to be that way, meaning look at the months that we gave. For the dry fodder, we're talking about, sorry, for the wet fodder, we're talking about Adar Nisan, springtime, rain, and look, and we're talking about the late summer for the dry fodder. It seems that way. Dilma, Peri De Elul V'Tishrei Ma'achin Alei, but Adar V'Nisan, the Gemara says, not necessarily. Maybe the peyre, the produce, we don't really mean fruit over here, but the produce of Elul and Tishrei, you feed it during the months of Adar Nisan, meaning perhaps not necessarily. It doesn't have to be specific to that season. The Kama Ma'achil Asam, Rav Yochanan Misham Rabbi Pinchas Bar Aruva, Kigrogris. how much fodder does it need to eat in order for proper treatment? So now we're going to, you know, it's a prescription over here. The Gemara is going to tell us kigrogris has to be the size of a fig. Amarava by Mamarava kigrogris besuda rishona odilma bechol seuda v'seuda. Gemara is going to ask a series of questions in terms of proper prescription and proper application of this treatment. First meal or every meal? Imtim salama besuda rishona kodem achila achar achila. And now when you take the medicine, you take it before food or after food? I know you. Kodem achila vadem alalei kisama l'achar achila mai. So the Gemara says before eating for sure is beneficial, right? Like other medicines. However, after eating, what would be the halacha? Kodem shtia l'achar shtia. Should you feed it this fodder before drink or after drink? V'kodem shtia vadem alalei kisarei. Maybe before drinking is for sure going to be beneficial. Achar shtia mai. Kashur or mutar? Animals should be tied up when eating or free when eating. What they call that now? Free range, right? Mutar vaday malele. If it's untied, it's for sure good. Kashur mai. I guess the question is when it's tied up. Okay. Levado o im chavero. Should the animal dine alone or should the animal have company when dining? I also like that question. Should this treatment be done in the city or out in the field? You know, doctor tells you, you know, go to the country, right? The air is good over there. Be'ir mai by Ravashi im Tim Salama besada ginas mucha le'ir mai. What if it's a garden next to the city? What about that? Teku on all these questions. The Gemara leaves these questions unresolved. Okay, stop. We'll pause over here. Okay, Frelich and Chanukah, everyone. Thank you very much to everybody. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.